So I want you to picture a scene, not at this church. Imagine another Unitarian Universalist church miles and miles away. So it's a beautiful morning. The sun is shining. The birds are singing. Everything you could ask for on a beautiful day. And during the ride there, Elizabeth finds herself staring at the clear blue sky and feeling grateful that she'll soon be spending time with her church family. She thinks of them as family because over time, they've grown connected with each other, from working together on issues of social justice to supporting each other in good times and in bad. It's a connection that she values and appreciates. So here Elizabeth comes. She comes walking into the sanctuary doors, and there's an old friend there standing at the door as a greeter. And he begins to smile, but as his eyes focus on her face, his expression freezes, and then he quickly turns to speak to someone else. And she wonders if he's feeling all right this morning. Maybe something's wrong. Maybe he didn't see her. So she shrugs and moves through the doors. As she walks down the aisle toward her usual pew, she notices lots of stony faces and some people who definitely seem to be glaring at her. So she sits down and she turns to ask her dear friend Charlotte, what's wrong? When Charlotte abruptly gets up and moves to the back of the sanctuary as far from her as she can get. And so suddenly, on this morning, this beautiful morning, her community of kindred spirits is no longer that. And it's because of what she did out of a sense of the courage of her convictions. So that little exercise actually took us back on a trip to a Unitarian sanctuary in England about 162 years ago. And the woman whose shoes I was asking you to walk in for just a few minutes there, her name was Elizabeth Cleghorn Gaskell. And why that awkward, painful moment happened all those years ago, I'll get to in just a moment. So it was just last week that marked the 206th birthday of Elizabeth Gaskell, someone who I believe truly, truly deserves to be called a Unitarian heroine. And yet our own Unitarian Universalist Association bookstore doesn't stock a single title by Elizabeth Gaskell. And really, I shouldn't be surprised. Unlike other classic novelists, her name doesn't exactly trip off the tongue, not like Jane Austen or her contemporary Charles Dickens. Though in November 1865, when reporting her death, the Athenaeum rated Gaskell as, quote, if not the most popular, the most powerful and finest female novelist of an epoch singularly rich in female novelists. And this was an assessment that had much to do with her power in translating her Unitarian beliefs into prose. So why then did she fall off the radar over the years? You know, there's lots of reasons why that might have happened. Her novels were originally attributed to as being published by Mrs. Gaskell. And that, I think, relegated her to that unfortunate heap of female Victorian writers who essentially were deemed unworthy of carrying their own name at the time. And then for those welcoming the 20th century with its promise and innovation, I think there was doubt that her work, this Mrs. Gaskell's, these novels that had been so popular, had anything to say that was vital or relevant to this new age. And I think another reason, though, that is deeper than this goes back to our very first principle. Elizabeth Gaskell, who was a devout, lifelong, progressive Unitarian, married to a Unitarian minister, believed in the worth and dignity of every person. And because of that, her stories don't have the kind of juicy, scenery-chewing villains that pepper, you know, someone like Dickens' work. Good and bad in a Gaskell novel is much more complex, much harder to discern. And take North and South, for instance, which we just heard that excerpt that Mary read. Gaskell's heroine, Margaret Hale, comes to a mill town and finds herself friends with both the mill owners and the workers who despise the owners, with good reason. And so here this character is across cultural, social, and economic boundaries, and she's working to begin communication between these disparate groups. And the author never shies away from the complexity of this situation. And by the end of the novel, we ultimately see that none of them are really bad people, but they are people who've been shaped by these oppressive social systems that reward the rich and punish the poor. much like the world we live in now, I would say. And this complexity is what makes her work so fascinating, but it's also what's kept it from that easy popularity of Charles Dickens, who incidentally admired her work tremendously. It's safe to say that her work, in particular that exploration of economic injustice, really, was far ahead of its time. So speaking of time, let's go back again. 1848. Elizabeth Gaskell writes her first novel, Mary Barton, pouring her Unitarian values into the story of a poor trade union member who murders the would-be rapist son of a wealthy mill owner. This novel is an explosive look at the great class divide, with Gaskell not shying away from gritty details, as we heard in the reading this morning, surrounding the exploitation of the working class. So it's an era, of course, before television, before movies, and really, novels like this were the only way that comfortable middle and upper class people got any kind of window into what people who were facing poverty were going through. Charles Kingsley says of the book that he'd like to placard its sheets on every wall and have them read aloud from every pulpit till a nation calling itself Christian begins to act upon the awful facts contained in it. Those awful facts, the unshirking details of the horrific life of poverty and starvation faced by the mill workers at the time. This goes down hard with, guess who? The Unitarian mill owners at the very church where Elizabeth is minister. She writes this book. Her husband's the minister at this church, and her congregation's filled with people who run these mills. They see themselves in the pages of the book, and they don't like it. And that's why I ask you to take that walk in Elizabeth Gaskell's shoes down the aisle of her beloved church. This first book was written anonymously, but the identity of the author had leaked out, so you can just imagine what that first Sunday morning was like, you know, as she comes walking down the aisle, and they know that she's written this look into the reality of the situation of the time. But she perseveres. She continues to write. She continues to open a window into things that people would rather not think about, even in the face of her own community temporarily turning its back upon her. And as we can imagine, this is not an easy thing to do. Maintaining our belief in what is right in the face of others who disagree, especially those in the communities we are part of, this is not easy. But Gaskell is an example of someone who stood by her beliefs, forged as they were within her Unitarian faith. But her work shows that she wasn't rigid or stodgy about them. She recognized there are multiple sides to every story. And I think that's an important lesson, an important thing for us to think about as we determine what our convictions are and what courage it will take to uphold them, and to recognize that sometimes we may not get it right. Sometimes we may be wrong. Courage and conviction are things to be valued, but they should also be tempered with a willingness to listen, learn, and adjust our approach as needed. After all, it's never easy to see the big picture when we are living in the middle of the complexities of injustice. Elizabeth Gaskell says, I believe this is our centering thought this morning, how easy it is to judge rightly after one sees the evil that comes from judging wrongly. And for me, this is all about hindsight, that clarity that hindsight offers us in concerns of moral conflict. We'd all like to believe, I know I would, that if we went back in time, we would always be on the right side of history. We'd be the ones demanding the Romans would stop throwing Christians to the lions. We'd be fighting against foot binding, exploitation of the poor, and slavery wherever its insidious grasp has found a home. We'd like to believe that we would have been the ones marching for women's suffrage. We would have been the ones calling for interracial marriage. We would have been the ones marching for civil rights in the 1960s and on and on and on. And I know some of us actually were those people in some of those situations. And yet the heroes of yesterday were often the pariahs of their time, like Elizabeth Gaskell's own people turning their backs on her, her own Unitarian community turning their backs on her. You know, and we think of someone like Martin Luther King Jr., you can find Of course, you know, now he's this saint-like figure, but you can find lots of quotes from people at the time who just, progressive people even, who said he was a rabble-rouser and so on. And so the question then is, what is going on in our world today that we need to have courage in order to share our sense of conviction? Now, some people who've lived through and supported the civil rights movement have questioned the messiness of the Occupy movement or the Black Lives Matter movement taking place in the streets. I've heard people offering criticisms of that. And I think that over time it's easy for us to get kind of entrenched in our comfortable world of relative security. And so I wonder where we find a sense of conviction amidst the complacency that sets in time. How many of us are willing to stand up against systems of injustice, economic injustice, when we know we benefit from them at the same time, however indirectly? How many of us are willing to think about issues like ableism? Is that something that you've thought about before? Ableism, it's a conversation that's really bubbling up now, that our world is set up so that those who are less able-bodied are treated as second-class citizens. How many of us are willing and ready to think about issues around people who identify as transgender? How many of us are still wrestling with issues around immigration in this country? My question, then, for all of us, me included, is what issues in the world today do we struggle with? What do we feel a lack of conviction about? And whatever our answers are, those, I think, are likely the issues we really need to be focused on. Because it might be fear stopping us from feeling that sense of conviction that causes us to act to make positive change. Where do we find the courage that we need to stand up and say something is wrong or unjust, and we too will add our voices to those who speak against it? So these are issues we're facing in contemporary society. So just imagine what it's like for a woman, no less, someone like Elizabeth Gaskell, who's dealing with these unpopular ideas all the way back in the mid-1800s. Can we imagine how it felt for her to expose her deeply held and controversial principles through her art for the sake of effecting social change? How it felt to suggest in rigid Victorian society that there could still be virtue and goodness in an unmarried pregnant woman, that children who stole food deserved an education, or that mill workers who lashed out in violent protest might be at least somewhat justified in their actions. These are controversial ideas for the time. The backlash from her work came from the very people she considered her friends. And yet she continued to produce work that pushed people toward justice. Critic Jenny Uglow says that Gaskell was intrigued by schemes that suggested capitalism really could be combined with care. Again, this is something we're still struggling with right now, right? Capitalism combined with care. And wanted to stress the role of sympathy and perhaps suggest practical ways to move forward. And in North and South, one of my favorite scenes where she really shows herself at the height of her powers as a novelist is where there's this dramatic, violent showdown between the striking mill workers and Mr. Thornton, the hardworking mill owner who is attempting to make ends meet by replacing these local people with poorly paid immigrant laborers that he's brought in. Again, these ideas are not far from things we're dealing with nowadays, right? So in a plea for communication among these groups, Margaret Hale, the protagonist in the story, she says to the mill owner, "Speak to your workmen as if they were human beings. Speak to them kindly. Don't let the police come in and cut down these poor creatures who are driven mad by starvation and hopelessness. If you have any courage or noble quality in you, go out and speak to them." So I'm currently pursuing a second master's degree in interfaith action. And the program is really dealing with healing that turmoil that is so alive in today's world. And I can say that really this program, at the heart of it, comes down to this idea of communication, dialogue. And so we see a novelist like Gaskell all those years ago knowing that dialogue across boundaries and differences, that is really the key to it all. We're still dealing with the same thing today. So there's another controversial novel she penned called Ruth. In it, we find Gaskell dealing head-on with the idea of sexual morality, for Ruth is unmarried and pregnant. Now, that wasn't an uncommon device in literature of the time, but the difference is that Ruth's fate in this novel is to actually lead a productive life, gain respectability, gain employment, create a happy life for herself, rather than it just being a story of degeneration. She ends up as a nurse at the end of the novel. And I think that was very deliberate on Gaskell's part, that here this woman who had been an outcast ends up caring for other people. And this surprisingly sympathetic portrait of what was then called a fallen woman naturally provoked much controversy. Again, that Unitarian congregation, they weren't ready for this stuff. Fathers burned copies of Ruth by the dozen, lest this book dealing with so-called illegitimacy fell into their daughters' hands. And two members at Gaskell's very own Christ Chapel Unitarian Church held book burnings as well. So certainly, there is... In recent years, there has been really a renaissance of interest going on around her work. In the last probably 10 or 12 years, the BBC has made many series of Wives and Daughters, North and South, and Cranford, and they've been truly acclaimed. And there are a lot more people kind of looking at her work and realizing the impact that she had and is still having. But in case you're not convinced that her work is relevant to today, I ask you this question. Does this person sound familiar? Someone keenly concerned with social justice, women's rights, access to education for everyone, decent living and working conditions for all, and religious freedom. Someone who volunteers to help the needy, who champions the freedom to follow one's own spiritual path. Someone who challenges traditional ideas of morality, who champions those who might be different, faces controversy when necessary, celebrates the idea of community even amongst those who are vastly different, and perhaps, most importantly, someone whose actions reveal the courage of her convictions. I hope this person sounds like someone we might aspire to be today. So my question for you is, what are our convictions as a community? What beliefs do we firmly hold? And do we have the courage, do we, to hold on to those beliefs even when it's hard, even when it's not easy, even when we risk our own personal peace in so doing? I would hope we hold convictions about what this world can and should be. I would hope that we hold convictions about justice and equality for all. I would hope that we are willing to do the hard internal work of finding sources of strength and steadiness so that we don't waver in our courage when the time comes to act. We can look at Elizabeth Gaskell and know that she was but one of many prophetic voices that make up our faith tradition, that call us now in today's world into spaces of transformation. And so let us continue to listen to voices that call us into places of conviction, into a deeper understanding of what it is we hold most close, most sacred. And let us find the courage to not only hold those beliefs, but to act upon them, to be the change maker in a world that often doesn't welcome change. And in so doing, let us be our best selves, braver, stronger, mixing humility with conviction as we journey forward together. As Elizabeth Gaskell warns, the cloud never comes from the quarter of the horizon from which we watch for it. So let's be ready to meet those clouds, those challenges, from wherever they may come. Let us be the umbrella that can shield ourselves and others from the storms ahead. May it be so.